Welcome to the Sustainable You podcast with your hosts, Jackie Kidman and Lisa Whiston. Self-proclaimed urban hippies, waste warriors, and passionate women. Tune in for practical information and inspiration on how to reduce your impact on the environment and become a more sustainable you.
Before we begin, Lisa and Jackie would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and the places on which we record our podcast. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Sustainable You podcast with your hosts, Lisa and Jackie. Today, we are bringing to you a conversation that we had with Phil Westwood. Phil is a free-range egg farmer from Grantville in regional Victoria, and he operates a farm of about 200 acres and has 1,200 chickens, which excited Jackie and I so much. Phil's farm is more than carbon neutral. It's actually carbon positive. So through carbon sequestration in his soils, to the fact that he's got solar panels and reuses so many of his farming equipment, basically is putting out less emissions than what he is taking in. I'm so excited to talk to Phil, and we had a few technical issues. So Phil dialed in on a landline. So the audio is a little bit scratchy, but the content of what he's saying is super interesting. And we hope that you enjoy this chat with Phil.
Hello, Phil, and welcome to this week's episode of Sustainable You podcast. We're very excited to have you. Lisa and I, we are chicken mothers. We have a couple of chickens ourselves, but nothing in comparison to what sort of amount of chickens that you have. So maybe just to get started, just tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, thanks. Good to be here. I'm Phil Westwood, and my wife and I, I run a farm down at Grantville with, at the moment, around about 1,000 chickens. We're producing free-range eggs. The number of hens we have varies depending on the time of year and what the demand is. But, yeah, we run flocks of about 200 birds at a time and various paddocks with those with mobile sheds in. And each chook has its own Maremma dock to protect them from marauding foxes and eagles and things like that.
Oh, I absolutely love Maremma dogs.
Oh, they're terrific.
I'm a huge fan of the movie Oddball. Have you seen that?
Yeah, it was a good movie.
That was a great movie. My girlfriend Carla, who listens to our podcast, she'll appreciate that plug because she was from Warrnambool, and I'm always like, where are the Maremma dogs? And how long have you been doing this for?
We've been doing it for about nearly 20 years now.
Wow! And did you buy this property to do this? How did it kind of begin?
Well, it began. We had a small property down at Wonsaggi. We had 20 acres down there, and it wasn't enough to make a living off. So we were looking for something bigger, and we found this place, 200 acres, at Grantville, fronting the Bass River. And so we bought that. And then once we bought it, we realised that there was a lot of native vegetation on it, which linked the flora and fauna reserve next to us to the Bass River. So we had to work out some way of making a living from it without clearing the land. Mm. And free-range chooks seemed like an obvious fit because we didn't need to clear much land, or any land, in fact, to run the chickens we wanted enough to make a living.
That's amazing that you've kind of started off sort of buying a property and thinking, okay, what can I do with it, and really having then that sort of protecting the earth and the natural vegetation and stuff like that. And then how did you learn everything you needed to know to become a free-range egg farmer?
Well, mainly trial and error, but also the internet helps a lot because lots of information available. But there's nothing like getting in there and just doing it, and you learn as you go.
Mm.
And sure, you make mistakes along the way as you're doing it. You do that with everything. But, eventually, I mean, we worked out that mobile sheds were the way to actually do it properly rather than having fixed sheds with the chooks in them, because obviously when you've got chooks in one position, being the animals they are, they dig the ground and there are holes everywhere, and you end up in wet weather with a complete mud bath around the sheds.
Mm.
So as long as you can keep the sheds moving, you keep the grass around and you don't have all that dirt and the problems associated with it.
Will, how often do you move the sheds? Like how long are they in the one spot for?
Well, normally the sheds are moved once a week. Sometimes it depends on the time of year, but once a week is ideal. just to keep them moving so that it's always on clean grass.
And so the other thing is that this philosophy of, you know, minimal impact on the land goes further to some of your farming practices and some of the things that you've applied to your farm. So can you tell us some of those as well?
Yes, well, one of this area, the ground is fairly acidic, so it doesn't grow exotic grasses very well. It has a lot of native grasses. But most people, they want ryegrass and clover and that sort of rubbish, and so they have to apply lots of lime to reduce the pH of the soil.
Mm.
But we work on the basis that we like native pasture, so why change things? We don't need to apply limes and things or other and even other fertilizers, because we want the native grasses to do as what they do, because they survive better. I mean, they prefer the drought, they're more drought tolerant than the imported grasses. So we reckon you live with what you've got, and if you've got native grasses, leave them alone.
Mm. Which is so important now. Like, you know, it's always been important, but I think a lot of farmers are coming back to that, aren't they, that are realising how much they have messed with the soil. And
that's right.
And trying to get it back, whereas if you have that practice in place from the beginning, then the animals and the vegetation, they all do the work for you to prepare the soil.
That's right.
Yeah. Which is really important, I guess, in terms of drawing down carbon, and there's so many positive impacts that good soil and animals play in making sure that soil is rich in nutrients and doing its job. So in terms of for you, you obviously sell your eggs. Do you sell them in stores or do you sell them straight from your farm gate?
Yeah, well, all of that. We sell direct from the farm, but we have a few outlets that we sell them through, mainly small ones. I mean, we certainly don't go to supermarkets. You'll never find free-range eggs in the supermarket. They're just not there. Labelled free-range, but they're not free-range. To supply the major supermarkets, you have to be able to supply truckloads of eggs. And when by a truckload, I mean a semi-load. And there's no free-range farm that can actually do that. So consequently, the only eggs they have in supermarkets are from the major producers who buy eggs from wherever they can, stick them in their cartons with their labels and pretend that they're free-range. And that's how it works. Yeah. So really, if people buy their eggs in the supermarket, you might as well buy the cheapest eggs you can find, because they're all the bloody same.
Wow. That's mind-blowing.
Talk about the Greens, that bunny, that bunch of idiots.
Hey there, Climactic Collective listeners.
I'm Emerald Moon.
And I'm Tom Bella.
And together we host Serious Danger,
a podcast about Australia's broken political system and its greatest threat,
the Australian Greens.
Yeah. It's a show about green politics in Australia.
The kind of politics that puts people and the planet before profit.
We talk to cool and interesting people about fighting for good shit, like taxing billionaires,
housing for all,
workers' rights,
First Nations justice,
and drugs. Sweet, sweet, sweet drugs.
Join us on Serious Danger every Sunday. You can subscribe to us anywhere you get podcasts.
You can find us on Patreon. We're at Serious Danger AU on the socials, or just head to seriousdangerpod.com.
That's Serious Danger with me, Emerald Moon.
And me, Tom Ballard. Do you think we need something at the end there? Go Greens.
It's that same message though, isn't it? It's like, if you're buying from a big supplier like that, then you're never going to get the true organic produce that's, you know, designed and grown in the area, in the local area, that is designed to be eaten by people living around that area.
Every township should have a farm, and there's no need to truck stuff from right across the country. You just supply your local area, and everyone becomes sort of independent, basically.
Is that what your farm sort of does? So you supply locally?
Yeah, we only sell locally. We don't deliver very far at all.
Mm. And hate to bring it up, but in the current climate of COVID, how have you been affected, or has it had a positive or negative impact on your business and your the way you run? Or
it hasn't affected the way we run. It's had an impact on some of our sales, because the restaurants and a couple of the restaurants that we supply have closed down because they couldn't cope with all the restrictions. And a few of the shop outlets their volumes are reduced because a lot of their business is based on people coming down from Melbourne and travelling through, because this is very much a touristy area. But if people can't come down from Melbourne and go home, then their sales decline, and therefore that affects our bottom line to some extent. But in terms of our business as such, it hasn't really had much impact on us. It certainly hasn't affected the way we farm.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. I guess you're not really dealing with people, so you're just dealing with chickens.
Oh, that's right. I mean, people come in. We have a big yellow cool box in our driveway, and people can come and buy eggs there. And we don't have to meet them or touch them or whatever. They just come and get the eggs and leave the money there, and off they go. So there's no, they can come and get their eggs.
I love that.
And quite a few do, but it's not a huge number. You know, it's not thousands a day. It's a handful.
Mm. Yes. And you don't just have chickens on your farm. You've got a couple of other animals that help with the grazing and stuff process. Is that right?
Yeah, we have sheep and we have some cattle. But they're very much add-ons. I mean, we've got a house cow, a Jersey house cow, which when she's had a calf, we milk her, and we love the Jersey milk and cream, and making butter and things like that, and cheese.
Is it called a Jersey house cow because is that what's I've never heard that.
A Jersey cow, a house cow is a cow you keep for the use of the house, for your own use.
Right.
You know, it's not like we have a dairy herd where we're producing thousands of gallons of milk a week. What a day. It's a bucket, of milking. And you just put it through the separator and get the cream, and then you can decide whether you're making cheese or cream or what.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. I love the understanding of the simplicity of, you know, like when you're saying like a Jersey house cow and, you know, supplying to your local area, you know, that's what we need to. I feel like we've lost that, and that's why I think people are really craving to get back to that. Getting back to the smaller, there's probably a better word for it, but, you know, within your local areas. So do you want to just talk a little bit more about that, about how that's part of, because it sounds like that's part of a real passion for you, is to encourage people to sort of almost set up like, would it be micro farms or... What's the wording around that?
Yeah, well, micro farms is a good word, but you don't need huge amounts of acreage to do things that you can make a living out of and to produce food for people. I mean, on a small scale at home here, when we grow most of our own veggies, certainly all of our own herbs and things like that, but really only for our own use. I mean, some of our friends and whatever they have our production as well, but basically we can grow most things that we need for ourselves. And even with some of the sheep we have, I mean, we can get a butcher to come in and butcher the sheep for us, and we often eat our own meat. Mm. So it's not just the veggies, but we don't sell meat. It's just for our own use.
Yeah, and that's including the chickens as well. It's more the eggs, or
yeah, the eggs. I mean, the eggs. Of course, we eat quite a few eggs ourselves, but they're the ones that produce the income, which enables it to pay the bills. I mean, it'll never be enough on the scale we are. It'll never be enough to buy a new Mercedes every time a new model comes out, or take an overseas holiday every time you can. I mean, it doesn't produce enough money for that sort of thing, but it produces enough to pay the rates and pay the electricity and all the other bills, and provide enough money to go out and buy the stuff you need.
Mm. Which, really, what more do you need? That's how I feel.
Well, the problem is most people need a lot more than that. Most people need to have more than they had last year, and every year it's got to be more. You know, that's the whole philosophy of society now, is you've got to have more than you had before. And you've never got enough. No one ever has enough. They just want more and more and more. And that's why the system of the world is in such trouble, because everyone is trying to get more. Mm. But it can't work long term.
No. And it's that big thing around, which we talk about quite often, and it's part of a passion of mine, is that big thing around consumerism. You know, we, like you're saying, like the fancy new car or the you know,
or the new big screen television. Yeah, every time a new one comes up, everyone's got to have it. Oh, gee, we must get one of those.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's sort of that, and I think that society has made us believe that we have to have that, and you know, we've got to keep up with the Joneses.
If we've got that, we're happy. If we don't have it, we're not happy, and we're depressed. And it's, you know, it's pathetic. What a strange way to run a life.
Mm, yeah. You know, my car is it's 16 years old, and like it doesn't have anything fancy in it. It doesn't, you know, like, but it's a good car. You know, I don't really want a new one. You know, and
no, it gets you from A to B.
It does.
That's basically what your car does.
That's right. It does what it needs to do. And I've had it all from when my kids were babies up until now. They're like, you know, they're a lot bigger. And it's, you know, it is quite interesting because my husband's like, well, you'll probably need a new car soon. And I'm like, well, not really. I don't really, like, this one's fine, you know. And I guess that's also, it is quite interesting how things are marketed as well to kids, you know. I know this is off the topic of free-range egg farming, but, you know, it's around that wanting that new device or wanting that new toy or needing to have that. And us, I think, also as parents of thinking, well, our children need to have that.
Yes.
And
well, the thing is, we're brought up believing that the economic system demands growth. There has to be perpetual growth. You know, and without it, the whole system, the economic system of the world, collapses.
Mm.
So that the traditional thinking is of the economists. I mean, it's got to be bigger and better, and brighter.
Mm. Yes, and I think that probably part of the benefit, I guess, of COVID-19 is that people realised how little they needed. You know, they can live off what's in their pantry. And also we had Lisa and I are in Melbourne, so we had the 5 kilometre limit.
Yep.
And the curfew and all the other restrictions, which is fine when we, you know, whatever. So you basically had to source stuff locally. For a lot of people that didn't do that before, whereas I've kind of always done that in my area anyway, you know, it was quite interesting. I was talking to the guy down the road who's run sort of like a deli, fresh food and vegetables and stuff as well. And he was saying a lot of people he's never seen before, but because they're in the 5 kilometre radius, he now sees them. And he's wondering what happens, you know, would they then move out to go to a bigger supermarket or a, you know, Has it changed their behaviour to just shop locally rather than going to a bigger supermarket? And that's what I guess now we'll start to find out. Really.
It'll be interesting to see if it is. I suspect it won't. They'll go back to shopping in the big supermarket because they're the ones they see on television. So they gravitate to them and they believe the crap that they're cheaper. They're not cheaper. You work out the prices. You know, rather than go to a big supermarket for fresh food. I mean, the supermarkets are fine for buying toothpaste and soap and toilet paper and things like that. But if you want to buy fresh food, go to a food place, go to a greengrocer and a butcher and a fishmonger. You know, stay out of the supermarkets for that sort of stuff.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. That's what I do. But it's not common. It's quite uncommon.
No.
Which is unfortunate. But I feel so. How could we help people to get back to that local kind of purchasing, and any ideas?
Well, making sure it's available. I mean, I try to encourage people to set up their own small farms. We have an ebook available which sort of takes them through the steps in which they need to set one up, and they can produce it. It can be egg production. It can be any kind of, even a small market garden producing fruit and veggies. And it can be done. Every local area should have its own available source of food.
Mm.
I think that's much better than having to truck food from across the country.
Yes, I agree. And understanding to eat seasonally as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Like, I think that...
Oh, it's madness. People buying, you know, getting strawberries flown in from California, you know. Amazing stuff.
Phil, I have a question around the other theme that COVID has probably brought home to lots of families, which is basically about looking at their own backyard or their own home and realizing how unsustainable or sustainable it is. Now, you run a chicken farm of 200 acres, is it?
Yes,
and you profess to be carbon neutral or even carbon positive. So can you just give me a brief outline of some of the things that you've done in your farm to achieve that kind of result?
Well, it's making sure that we get a lot of regrowth, regeneration of native trees in particular, but also shrubs in the paddocks where the chooks are. We have a lot of the kangaroo apple, which the chooks love to eat, fruit, and then the seeds pass through them and they reseed and you get kangaroo apples springing up all over the paddocks. We provide shrubs for them, but also it's growth and it's pulling carbon out of the air and putting it back in the soil.
Yeah, right. And so, and you also have solar, don't you, on the property?
Yeah, we have solar on the farm, yes. We more power than we actually use on the farm.
You generate more power than what you use. And how many solar panels do you have? Like, is it a massive operation or is it simple?
We don't have lots. It's only 12.
Wow. That was quoted to me when I got a solar quote, 12 panels. And you're running a farm on that. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, it depends how much power you use, doesn't it? If everything's electric and whatever, I suppose it would be an issue.
Yeah, I just feel like that there's a really good lesson there. Like if somebody's able to run a fairly decent operation on very low energy use and very little impact on the environment, then what are we doing as just your everyday community members, like just pulling so much energy off that grid and using and consuming and buying so much? Like it's a really nice symbolism to try.
That's right. That's why the earth is strife, because most people are doing exactly that.
I guess the last question that we'd like to ask you, Phil, is one that we ask all of our guests, and that is, what would be your tip for increasing our listeners' sustainability? What's your one tip?
Well, try to only use things that you need. You know, there's you don't need to buy everything that's brand new and shiny. Keep using things and repairing them. I mean, that's a big thing too. If something goes wrong with something, rather than replace a part of it, they go and buy a new one and throw the old one away. So you fill up the rubbish tips with all the old stuff. When it might be perfect. All it needs maybe is a couple of screws or a couple of bits added in, and it would bring it back to serviceable use. It doesn't have to be bright and shiny.
Well, Phil, when we get out of lockdown, Jackie and I are coming to see you and your chickens, I tell you that.
Okay, yeah, that'd be good.
You might be missing before we leave. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, no worries.
It's been so good to hear your story. Well, we hope that you enjoyed that chat. I wasn't sure what to expect, to be honest, with talking to Phil, but he's very down to earth. And now I want to get a piece of land and I want to get a Jersey house cow.
Yeah, it's guys like that that have this wealth of knowledge that you know, they've learned and accumulated over the years that would be just, they're just so interesting to talk to. Like I literally could stand there and ask him questions all day and I reckon he'd be happy to answer them. He's a super nice guy.
So the biggest point as well that he made in that was around the labelling of free-range eggs. Do you think that was really interesting? I mean, we don't need to buy eggs because we've got chickens when they lay, but, you know, it just that deception and it's around takes us back to knowing where your food's coming from. That's how I feel. I feel that's a really, you know, we just need to continually remind people and each other of that. The food that you get from those big chain supermarkets, you know, that's not necessarily come from us. You know, it's come from a big chain.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's something that everyone, I mean, our listeners probably already know that, you know, especially with eggs. But, you know, I think everyone should go home and tell half a dozen people, you know, guys, even if you're going to the supermarket with all the best intentions and only buying free-range marked boxes of or cartons of eggs, that that's not actually the case. You guys need to kind of think of other ways that you can source your eggs from a local egg supplier or go to a local greengrocer, fruit and veg shop that are selling locally produced free-range eggs. That's a simple thing to do. Well, hopefully that one tip is one of many that you will find on our podcast. And as always, we hope that it will inspire you and help you to become
a more sustainable you.
Sustainable You can be found on Instagram at Sustainable You Pod, on Facebook at Sustainable You Podcast, or connect via email at sustainableyoupod@gmail.com. Episodes are created by Lisa and Jackie and produced by Fran from 17th Street Audio. If you appreciate the podcasting information shared, please like, subscribe, and share. If you are listening on iTunes, Jackie and Lisa would appreciate you giving them a 5-star rating and writing a review to help other people find their podcast.